Welcome to Fresno's Best Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Maddox. Today we have Crystal Ueno and Nayantara Rodriguez on the show. They are the co-founders of Rooted Heart Yoga, a 200-hour all-levels yoga teacher training located here in Fresno. Between these two amazing women, there is so much knowledge and perspective, not only about yoga, the body, and mental health, but also the qualities of a good teacher in developing a business approach to fitness. I know you'll enjoy this conversation. Let's go meet Tara and Crystal.
Blessed to infiltrate the pod waves on infinite quests, investigating, making convos to elevate guests. Politics, religion, culture, art, music, show some respect to the best little city left in the U.S. Fresno's best! Fresno's best!
So we'll start with you, Crystal, and then Tara, I want to hear if you have any updates or revisions. I don't even know. I interviewed you so long ago, I can't even really recall what your list was. But yeah. Crystal, where do you like to eat in Fresno?
Ooh, I would have to say my favorite is Heirloom.
Okay. What's your order? What do you like to get there?
What do I not order there would be a better question. I like to get a little plethora of everything. I would have to say I love the sweet potato with tzatziki. Mm. It's like my favorite. I know, so basic.
You're making me hungry. I haven't eaten.
So good. Oh, and their loom bread. Their loom bread with their brie. Mm.
Yeah, I recently discovered the loom bread. I hadn't had that before. It's really good. Tara, do you like heirloom as well, correct?
Yeah, I think that's where we went to go have dinner.
Yeah. What's your heirloom order?
I don't go there often because honestly, I'm lazy. I hate waiting in the line.
Yeah. Crystal, how do you deal with that line? It feels like that line has stayed static since it's been open.
Yeah. That's so odd for Fresno. I feel like people hit up the place that first opens in Fresno and after a couple months, it dies off. And years later, for the loom bread, I'll be in line for an hour if I need to.
Wow. Tara, do you have any revisions to your list?
I don't think so. I think I said like a couple of Indian spots last time and pho. I'm still eating the same thing.
Like, okay. Yeah. We're just going to do a hard right into yoga. I want to talk about a lot of things, but I want to start with a story. So how this kind of the origin story, and then we'll get into the kind of mechanics of teacher training, which I have a lot of, as a teacher, I have a lot of questions about. So Crystal, why don't you take us through the journey of how Rooted Heart got started?
Ooh, I feel like from the moment I met Nayantara at a 5 a.m. yoga class years and years ago, we just had an instant connection. Wasn't sure what that was going to be or look like in the future, but I know that we definitely were soul sisters. And then we started NFC. So we've just worked together at different places, doing different events and different things. And we have a really similar teaching mentality. The way that we like to teach and guide people, I feel like, is very similar. So it felt just very organic as Rooted Heart kind of came about. I felt like there was a sense of lack in the YTT community as a whole, not just here in Fresno, but like nationally, globally, for really teaching teachers to be like authentic. Yeah, we just started like talking about it, brainstorming. It felt so organic, didn't it, Tara? It wasn't like, let's do this. It just happened.
Yeah.
And we knew.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think we said it to one another and we were like, we should do that. And then people would ask us here and there, what are you guys going to ever do a teacher training or are you going to? And we just one day we're like, yeah, I think we will. And then it just happened. Yeah. So
why don't you sketch out in broad strokes what it is now from where you started to like what it is today? Like, how would you describe it as an entity? What are you doing? What are you offering? How many teachers are involved? How many students are you pushing through? Just give us a kind of a broad picture of what it looks like.
So we're just getting ready to graduate beginning of June, our actual third cohort. So that's crazy to believe. I think we tallied it up and there will be 52 graduates from the Rooted Heart Yoga program in June. So yeah, it's an all levels 200-hour Vinyasa yoga teacher training program. We really focus on trauma-informed yoga is a big part of our program. So it goes over the course of 6 months. It's one weekend a month for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And then we also, it's a hybrid program. So we also Part of it is online, doing homework is what we call it. It's like an experiential training, which is something, again, where I feel like when we were creating the program, we wanted it to be a little bit different. And I feel like that experiential training is really a testament to that. But yeah, we just 200 hours all together, and we teach philosophy, asana, pranayama, meditation, all the stuff you have to teach. But what we love is to get people to be their most authentic versions of themselves.
Yeah, and I want to piggyback off of that part because authenticity for us is working around like vulnerability. And I think, like you said, Crystal, earlier, it's just really hard to find yoga teacher training just in general, right? And not to knock or compare, it's just in general to find like that vulnerability piece in it because there's so much to cover and so much to do. So a lot of people, I feel, are trainings really focus on the mechanics of it, whereas we're focusing more on like the heart of it. And that's why like Rooted Heart is such a perfect name for our yoga teacher training program because we really try to get people to be very vulnerable and open about their heart and what they're going through. And so that way they can really find their authenticity. And it's funny because a lot of times they say, we didn't know this was going to be like a group therapy session. A lot of our graduates and our trainees have said that.
I think teaching is a spiritual practice. I've long felt that. Parker Palmer, The Heart of a Teacher, was one of the most important books to me. And one of the things that he articulates is that a good teacher understands him or herself or themselves and can articulate their authenticity and their identity clearly to students. And that's what makes a good teacher. It's not about any science or skills. And so I still very much believe that, having been a teacher in a public school for 15 years now. I want to ask some
That's
like hyper specific questions now. Why 200 hours? Why not 100? Why not 300? Why 200? And so I'm going to ask a kind of a barrage of questions. So either of you can jump in and answer, whoever wants to or has a strong thought about it.
good
Go ahead,
question. Why
Crystal.
200 hours?
Yeah.
Because the Yoga Alliance told us that's what it has to be.
Yeah, so I saw that, but why not 500? Because that's another thing that they offer as well, right? Why the 200? Is it just more
True.
accessible for people?
Yeah, I feel the 200 hour, it's more for people starting out. It's a little bit more broad. We don't dive as necessarily as deep into some of the topics. Yeah, it's
What
kind
could be the extra benefits from a 500 hour? It feels like a lot. It feels like you could accrue your skills through just teaching after 200 hours. Like, why would someone pursue that? Because 500 hours, that's a lot of
of like,
time.
but yeah. So I actually have my 500 hour teacher training. Because in order to be like a lead teacher of a YTT program, you have to have the 500 hour, I guess, just to show that you've done enough. But I'm also the same as you. I think 200 hours is actually like plenty. And I really believe in like just getting out there and teaching, and that's where you really get the best.
Tara, what do you think about online yoga training? There's various websites like Yoga Renew that offer like online certifications. Do you think how do you feel about that?
I don't know, one of my really good friends did online training and she's an amazing teacher. So I'm not going to knock online training. I think people learn in different ways and they can learn in different ways. And I also think, like Crystal just said, it's really the experience of being a teacher that's going to teach you more often than not. And the 200 hour, I felt like, was again like a broad surface of things. And when people want to dive in deeper to something, like I really love trauma informed. So I went a little bit deeper into that you can do that. Crystal and I almost did a 300 hour, actually. We were very close to starting one. And what we would do with the 300 hours, just dive into pockets with a 200 hour that are a little bit deeper than the 200 hour teacher training. However, we felt like the 200 hour is just already so well planned out, and we're getting such great success with that we just decided to do workshops and things for people to dive in deeper to the places that they really wanted to go into.
So kind of continuing education, once you get a degree, you maybe learn a specific skill. I guess that's my next question, which is why I see there's a lot of like discipline specific or tradition specific yoga certifications, specific vinyasa or hatha or something. How does someone think about choosing kind of something that's more niche or specific versus a general kind of survey of the different approaches? Or is that even really a thing in this world?
Yeah, it is.
It is because you're Tara's training was both vinyasa and ashtanga, which ashtanga is a little like more traditional, a set series. And I just did like a traditional vinyasa training.
And then what was the second question?
I guess, how do you make your mind up in choosing how to get certified? Like pursuing something specific or trying to, because it seems almost like we're going to get into business later, but like being an expert at one thing seems like economically that makes sense, but maybe you're less flexible. But if you have a broad kind of understanding of the different disciplines and can put on different hats for different studios or whatever, that seems also beneficial. So I guess I'm asking, like, how do you choose your certification program?
If I was a student and I was like looking for a teacher training, how would
Yeah,
I
yeah,
choose
yeah.
that? So when I taught, when I started wanting to teach, I looked more into, I didn't even know honestly when I started like what I wanted. I just knew I wanted to learn yoga. It just so happened I came across the Ashtanga and Vinyasa yoga, and I learned a little bit more about Ashtanga, and I thought, oh, that's really, I like that foundation. It's just like a foundation, and then the modern yoga has been built off of that. So that's how I chose mine, is that for me, it was more like broad, right? And that's how 200 hour is anyway. It's usually more broad. And then from that point on, it's really depends on you, how much you want to learn, how far you want to go, where you want to go into, what you want to do, kind of thing. So I would suggest if you're a student, maybe ask yourself, one, like, what is your intention behind getting a yoga teacher training? Because some people just want to do it to find more knowledge of yoga. A lot of our students just come in just wanting to learn more about yoga. It's not even about wanting to teach. So what's your intention behind it? What's like your maybe end goal in a way? Are you just going to learn a specific type of yoga, or are you going to find a maybe a more broad spectrum of yoga? And then from there, maybe make a decision. That's maybe some of my feedback.
That makes sense. Tara, this question's for you specifically. I'm curious. It seems like there's more kind of like therapeutic elements are being inserted into yoga training, trauma-informed, thinking about yourself as not a clinician, but someone in the room that's doing things that are a therapeutic with therapeutic goals. How do you think about like mixing those roles as someone that's an LMFT? Like you want to give people tools, but you don't want them to overuse their tools and think they're a clinician in the yoga studio. So how do you balance that?
That's a good question, because Crystal does this too. I think Crystal's just a natural healer. So I feel like we both, and this is why we both have the same teaching style, is even though you're not a therapist, you're a healer, and you've gone through your own kind of like journey with yoga and healing. So I think with me, I come more from a felt sense type of thought, is like, how do I feel in a yoga room? What do I want to feel? How did I heal? What worked for me? And then I just base it off of that. There are a few tidbits I might say here and there that I know as just a therapist, people naturally do or think. So I do add those little things in there. But for the most part, I come from my own experience.
Crystal, when you're teaching a room of future yoga teachers, how do you talk differently compared to when you're teaching just a group of adults at a studio? Like, what sounds different? Are you describing more of process and your approach, like giving people a skeleton, just like a map of what's happening in the space, or do you allow them to experience? I'm curious about the difference there.
Yeah, I feel like that's a really good question, and I would like to reflect on that a little bit more. But I feel like I teach very similarly, whether I'm teaching in a studio class or whether we're teaching in the YTT program. I feel like I teach very similarly. I know a lot of people who come to a studio class, or a large portion of them are there for the workout. And so I'll have them like in a plank while I'm talking like yoga philosophy, ahimsa, satya, mindfulness. So I try and merge both of those. That being said, when we're doing the YTT, I don't have them holding a plank while I'm talking to them about that. We just talk about it a little bit more, which I really enjoy, because sometimes I feel like it's a challenge in a studio class to really dive deeper into a lot of these topics. So that's one of the things I love about being able to lead the YTT, is we really get to dive a little bit deeper into that. And then there's a little bit back and forth with the students. When I'm teaching studio class, everyone's just quiet with their yoga face on. So it's nice to bounce ideas around. And I learned so much from my students in YTT.
So sometimes And you see this sometimes at universities, where you'll have a really strong student in a class, and they think because they're good in your class that they should be a professor or something. And you'll have in a yoga studio someone that's like incredibly talented physically, but that might not necessarily translate into them being a good teacher. So, what are you looking for in a potential teacher if it's not purely their physical abilities? Tara, you want to answer that one or Crystal?
Okay, Jordan coming in with all the
Well,
hot questions.
I
Dang.
mean,
I need
what are we
to
doing
write
here? Let's
these down
just
as a
let's
class.
have
These are
fun. Come on.
great questions.
Jeez. Okay, we do. So we have an application, right? And so your question, can you say it again?
Yeah, sorry, it was windy. I think some people assume because they're good at something, that means they should be a teacher of it. And I know that's not true as a teacher. I know lots of teachers that were middling students but became incredible educators. And you'll see people in your classes at your studio that like they're balancing on their heads while they're like crocheting, and you're like, what the hell? And you just assume, oh, those are the people that should be leading the class, but not necessarily. So I guess what I'm asking for is what it for you, if it's not that like I am so physically talented, what's the attribute you're looking for? Because I think people like gravitate towards mentors. And so for me, like I see potential teachers and I want to encourage them. So what are you looking for if you were like identifying someone in your studio that you're like, oh, you'd be a great teacher?
Vulnerability, authenticity, like the right intention of why it could be very clear, but it needs to be very clear because that's one of the first things that we ask everybody is, what's your why? Why are you here? Because teacher training is really hard. People think it's a little, oh, we're just gonna go and learn about yoga, but it's like deep. It gets into some of the deepest parts of us, makes us really challenge ourselves and look at ourselves, a lot like therapy. So are they willing to withstand it, and is their why strong enough? So I think those three for me would be probably the top three.
Crystal, do potential yoga teachers, do they enjoy breath work?
I mean, I guess it just depends their experience with it. I feel like with the breath, probably for the maybe first couple years of yoga, at least like year or two, I was like, what is this breath work? I don't get it. And then one day, like, I got it and now I can't forget it ever. So I guess it just depends if they've felt that shift in their nervous system, in their mind, in their body, that like actual physical, visceral shift from breath work. Then yes, they love it. But if not, then they're like, give me the handstands, where are the chaturanga? So I guess it just depends where they're at in their personal journey of yoga.
Interesting for me, I actually did the breathwork stuff before I started practicing yoga. I got into the Wim Hof cult in like 2015, took his classes or whatever, and it was a lot of fun. I learned a lot. And then when I showed up to like Tara's class, for example, where she tortures me, I would be so focused on my breath that I would lose track of my poses sometimes. Perhaps I'm just strange. Tara, how do you think a person's personality changes when they become a yoga teacher?
Oh, I don't think it should change. I just think I'm the same. I'm just way more mindful.
That's a change, right? That wouldn't used to say that's a qualitative change of some kind.
Yeah, but I'm still myself. I'm still a little bit hood. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm still
Kidding.
like
You're not kidding. Notorious
Does it
Nayantara.
that make you calmer and less reactive? Are there
Yes.
certain things that happen?
Yeah, but that's even it was making me like that, like it just being a student, I felt like it just made me so much more mindful. I was just a better mom, I was a better wife, I was a better person. It taught me not to take things so personally. And the amazing thing for me was that I had been doing years of therapy before yoga. So when I was able to actually be in my body and experience what was happening for me in the moment and letting go of some of the things that I was holding on to in my body, it was just so much easier to be a better person because I wasn't surviving. I wasn't just reacting. I was taking a breath before I spoke or before I said something that I usually wouldn't do before.
Crystal, how's it changed you?
Gosh, it's changed. Like, I feel like yoga is one of those things, for me personally, that just from practicing yoga, maybe not necessarily teaching, but it infused its way into every facet of my life. And I was actually talking to somebody who graduated from our training program today, and they were getting like imposter syndrome and feeling like they weren't enough. And I still get that as a teacher, 10 years, a decade of teaching. But I know now that the voice in my head isn't always being honest with me. And just as Tara said, that I can take a step back and pause between the stimulus and the response and choose my reaction. Of course, I'm still human and I'm still good a little bit like Tara, but it has helped me just so much in every facet of my life. That being said, I don't feel like people should change their personality in the core, the heart of who they are when they get up there and teach. I do feel like it's the seat of the teacher holds a lot of power. And so not letting that go to your head, because I have seen that before also.
What part of training do your trainees resist the most? Another way of saying that in a nice way is, what part stretches them the most?
I think it's different for everybody in that room. Some
Yeah. Well, what do
people.
you see patterns? Maybe that's maybe another way of saying it.
I
Certain
feel like
kinds of.
what stretches them. So we do this thing called clearing, which is group therapy. And so every we do it each day to begin, but we do a long clearing on Saturday morning. And it's we all sit in like a circle. We just say, what's coming up for everyone? What's came up for you in the next month? Is there something that you're celebrating? Is there something weighing heavy on your heart? And people initially are very hesitant to share and truly open up. They're like, I don't know, I had a bad day yesterday in the first weekend, or my tire was flat. And then as we progress through the weekends, people start to reveal like deeper parts of themselves as these layers start to peel off. I don't know what your original question was, but I know I'm on the right track.
Yes. Yeah, I'm just curious because when I'm if I'm teaching a class and everyone can do the task very simply, then I know I'm not being a teacher at that point. Like my job is to stretch them so they have growth. And so generally when you're stretching people, they offer resistance because growth just requires some element of discomfort. And so I was just more trying to tap into what are the areas where you're pushing people?
So I
What are they
think that is
resisting?
where they resist, is
Yeah.
like opening up. Like I feel like most of them are very open to the different like modules that we teach, but I feel like, oh, there can be, they come into the training program thinking that it's just going to be a cut and paste. This is how you teach yoga. This is this. And then we're like, tell me how you're really feeling. So I feel like that is some of the resistance right there, as opposed to the mechanics of yoga where you would think it would be.
Okay. A few questions about the yoga world and the fitness world. The first couple times I did yoga, it was at like a 24-hour fitness in Pasadena. And I don't know if the person that was leading the class was certified in any way. I remember her shaming me a lot, which I carried through
Oh,
until I had corrective experiences, which I
you
had
want to
plenty of
talk
those.
about it?
What's
You want to talk
that?
about
It was just, it was more like condescending. I'm sure I've told you this story, Tara, but
Oh,
it was something
you
like,
have.
oh, I can see that you're sweating a lot. Maybe you should just consider child pose. And I'm just like, this is how my body works, lady. Like, I don't know what to tell you. I'm going to sweat if I'm sitting down. I'm going to sweat if I'm having a snack. I'm going to sweat doing a lot of things.
It's like surprising, but not surprising, Crystal. It's like surprising, but not
Yeah,
anyway.
so is it worth it? Because it seems like there's an element of risk when you go to like yoga classes in other kind of non-yoga spaces. How do you think about people that teach in those big gyms versus studios? Is there like culture difference there? Is there training difference? Is there less standards that are applied there? I'm curious about if I were to go to a class at GB3 versus Four Corners, what am I going to see difference-wise?
What I was saying earlier, where I feel like studio classes and then taking it a step further, like gym classes, people a lot of times are there just for the workout. But I feel like that's a really unique opportunity to, as an, if you're teaching at a gym, to really start to bring in some of the like philosophy and the ethics of yoga. And even if it's in a very gentle way, start to infuse that in your classes.
That
No, I
sense.
know a lot of really fantastic, like I started off at a big like box gym, and it's definitely different, but I feel like again, that's like a unique opportunity to introduce people to just like a little glimpse behind the yoga curtain without being too obvious about it.
That makes sense. How do you guys feel about yoga teaching on YouTube?
I'm with it. I started a YouTube. I never followed through because I'm not really good with all the technology stuff. I'm like, if I could just teach yoga, perfect. But I like it. I encourage people. We do in our teacher training, we have them do, again, experiential training. So we have them do a logbook because we believe the best teachers really practice yoga. They stay close to their own personal practice. So we encourage them to try as many teachers online, short classes, long classes, restorative classes, power classes. So I feel like with YouTube and just the different apps and stuff that offer classes, I feel like they can start to move outside of what they maybe typically would practice and try new things. And then they never know what they'll stumble upon that they end up loving.
Do you think that yoga teachers could stand to benefit from observing other kinds of fitness instructors? If you go to Cycle Bar, those people are like, it's just a cult, right? And
All I could say is
they
Cycle
have
Bar, get
captured
me out of
everyone.
here.
Yeah, they have captured everyone in that room. And it could be like the environment, it could be just like the culture of cycle bars or whatever. But do you think there's things that you both could learn by going and watching other kinds of fitness trainers?
100%.
Yeah, so what might those be?
Pilates, for instance, like I did the reformer and I'm like, oh, the way she might cue something, and we're doing the same thing, maybe like in a downward dog. I'm going to take that and I'm going to use it. Or like a little muscle that I never thought I had in one of the classes. How can I apply that to my yoga practice? And what yoga moves can get to that same muscle I just used that I didn't know I had? There's so many things. Yeah, so definitely.
What about you, Crystal? You think there are things you can take from other fitness trainers?
Yeah, similar to like Tara said, whether you absolutely love whatever class you're in, or maybe you're like never going back, I feel like each class is an opportunity to just learn something different, whether it be to apply to how you teach yoga or just learn something about yourself in class. Circling back to when I went to Cycle Bar, I know the entire time I was like, I miss yoga, I miss yoga. But that said a lot about myself because yoga is my comfort zone and I don't step out of my comfort zone very often. So I was able to reflect on that, although I probably won't go back, but it was just interesting.
Yeah. Let me ask you some questions about you get your training and then you're on your own, right? Not on your own, but you're an entrepreneur, quote unquote. At that point, you're teaching classes, you're doing your thing. How do yoga teachers age? And let me ask it this way. Is there a physical ability level where as you like let me give an example. I was reading this great book by a neurosurgeon that's talking about what it's like to be a neurosurgeon, like the life, the practice. And in one of the concluding chapters, he talks about there's kind of that point where retirement is a consideration. And he said, on average, it's like late 60s, early 70s. That's where the dexterity with your fingers starts to go a little bit. And it's better for everybody if that's as you phase out of doing the procedures. Is there something like yoga teachers? What's the lifespan look like? Or do people continue doing it into their 60s, 70s, and 80s?
Crystal and I are going to do it all the way up until we can, so we can
The
move.
chair yoga.
So yeah, whatever. Yeah, I think. And again, yoga just isn't that asana practice or the physical practice. And we might be teaching some meditation classes sitting in our chair. I don't know, but I don't think I feel like I'm going to retire. I just think I'm going to evolve. What do you think, Crystal?
No, that's exactly what I was thinking too. The asana, the physical practice of yoga, is just one eighth of the equation. And I know that's really what's hyped up in like our Western world, and that's what kind of pulls people in, but that's just a small portion of it. And that's one of the things I love about yoga so much is its adaptability to evolve, like you said, Tara, through the different seasons or ages of your life. I teach a group of little ladies who are in their 80s and 90s yoga, and I teach them chair yoga once a month. And it may not be a lot of the asana again, but it's just that time for them to connect, for them to breathe, move their bodies a little bit. It's just so beautiful. So I feel like yoga can evolve through all the seasons of your life.
Often, would you recommend yoga teachers going to other people's classes? Is that something you should do weekly just to stay fresh? Or what would you guys recommend? Let's say someone's graduating from your cohort and they're like, how often should I just go to classes as well as teach classes?
Yeah, we require about what it comes up to about 60 classes altogether throughout the 6 months. And I think that breaks down on average about two classes a week, two to three classes a week. And I think that's again, we say meditation, sound bowls, all that stuff is part of this yoga teacher training. So all of that goes towards their 60 hours. So I would say about 2 to 3 hours a week, or just 2 to 3 classes, whether again that's meditation or a sound bowl experience or an actual class, or whether you lead your friends through a class, whatever it is to experience something, I would say on average 2 to 3 times a week.
Is that how much you do these days, going to other people's classes?
Yeah, I try and shoot for about 2 to 3 times a week as well. And I wish, like Crystal and I were just talking about this, that the next break we have, the next 6 months that we have our break from June to our next cohort starting in January, to really experience everybody's classes as much as we can, especially our former cohorts that have graduated and they're actually teaching now as well. So, yeah, we learn so much from our students and other teachers.
What does cross training look like for a yoga teacher? Like having general physical fitness?
Not
Are
running.
you on the squat bar at the gym, Tara? What's going on these days?
You know what? Okay, so perimenopause is settling in, Jordan, and I'm not gonna run, but I have, I know, I need to revamp my little workout routine. So I do need some strength training in there. So I will be doing that here and there.
Does
Strength
Pilates
training.
work really well for yoga teachers? Because it seems like they're similar
Yeah.
disciplines. Would you encourage like a teacher just to maintain general fitness to do something like that in conjunction with their yoga work?
Yeah, I think
Love
so.
Pilates.
Yeah.
I love Pilates. Like the I feel like that combination between yoga and Pilates is just like really great for me and my body. But I also agree that as we approach like perimenopause and get older, it's important to keep that muscle mass as well. So I feel like it would be beneficial maybe once a week to lift a little bit of heavy things, Tara. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm gonna shoot for 2 times a week, 30 to 40 minutes. Because if I overdo it, then my cortisol levels may go up, and then I'm increasing inflammation in my body.
Yeah, same. I gotta do what she said.
Can a yoga teacher be too swole? Because
No.
muscles get in the way of some elements of flexibility, right?
Yeah, one of our students, I'm not going to say the name, I don't want to embarrass anybody, but one of our students has a lot, you know who I'm talking about, a lot of muscle mass, and he does pretty good, pretty well in his
Okay. So those
foot.
things don't conflict. Got it. Okay. What would you say is the underrated muscle for a yoga teacher to develop? Is it core strength? Is it something lower body? What's underrated in terms of if you wish you could hone this like muscle or area of your body that would really enhance your practice?
I feel like yoga, especially if you're doing like sun salutations, A, B, C, really the whole flow as well, it targets like the entire body. But again, that being said, it's not going to, body weight isn't necessarily going to increase muscle mass. It's just going to build those long, lean muscles. But I feel like yoga really taps into the entire body unless you're looking to like really build or bulk.
Yeah, and I think everybody's so different. Ashtanga was like a perfect example of how different our bodies are, because when Crystal and I did Ashtanga, there were moments where she'd be very like flexible or whatever in this area, but I wouldn't, or vice versa. And so I think like for me, my shoulders are really weak. My upper body strength is pretty weak, so I like concentrate on building this a little bit more, whereas other people might not have that. So I don't think there's a specific one.
And
Sorry.
that's what's cool about yoga, because if you're like, I want to build my shoulders, then you can do a couple extra chaturanga push-ups. Or there's ways that if you're like feeling weakness in a specific area of the body, that you can intentionally target that during a yoga class.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk about spirituality now, which is the most complicated thing I want to talk about. And I want to start with kind of a broad question. I went to lots of professional development trainings when mindfulness was this big thing in public schools. We would go in there, we'd have some kind of corporate looking person talking to us about mindfulness, which was funny in and of itself. But it makes me like think about when you empty a container of its substance, and yoga in its roots is a spiritual practice, and it is still today for some people. But in a lot of places, it's emptied of that substance. The wine casks are empty, if you will. And so I guess the question is, how do you encourage people while also maintaining that respect for difference of belief And how would you talk to your yoga teachers about thinking about spirituality's role in, because they could be at a studio in San Francisco where people are very comfortable talking about Eastern philosophy and different things, and then, or they could be in Kansas and the Bible Belt teaching classes for all. So how do you explain that kind of dichotomy to them?
And I know that there is a preconceived notion that yoga is a religion because its origins, its roots stem back to Vedism and then Hinduism. But yoga isn't necessarily a religion, it's a philosophy and like an ethical, a moral framework for how to live your life. So you could be any religion. We've had people from many religions come through our YTT. Or you can be an atheist and not believe in anything and still practice yoga. There's a book by Yogananda called The Yoga of Jesus that I recommend a lot because it ties a lot into just the different teachings or different religions and how you can tie yoga into your beliefs. But I know there is a preconceived notion that it is a religion, but that's one of the things I love is we have a very diverse group of yogis that come through our training, like very diverse from different backgrounds, religions, no religion, and just knowing that there's a space in yoga for everybody.
So if you're looking at it as a philosophy, which may be another word for spirituality in some ways, like what are the important things to teach future yoga teachers from that philosophy? What are you really trying to drive home with them through your training?
I would say coming back to yourself, like when we talk about yoga and it's the yoking of our mind, body, and soul, what that really means by actually having them experience that. So we start one of our first trainings and weekend trainings is the philosophy of yoga. And we do sit down and we talk about just how that feels for some people coming from different backgrounds and what that feels like for them and what they've come across in their world, as far as some are Christian, some are Muslim, what they feel, what they're thinking, and then come back to their truth of what it is for them. So with yoga, we are really trying to come back to ourself, which ourself is connected to something so much bigger than our thoughts, this world, and we can all probably agree that we all come from the same place. We just don't know where. So to respect that in ourselves and find that truth within ourselves and actually practice that, I think is something that we throughout have them not just practice, but also we discuss it and talk about it and how that feels for them.
How does that look in Fresno? I'm curious. Like, Fresno is Bible Belt adjacent, strong Christian community here in Fresno. Like, how do you both think about when you're just teaching classes for students, like how much philosophy or spirituality to integrate? And like, how do you make choices in that?
You want to take this one? I stay true to myself. Like we always tell our students, stay true to yourself and be authentic. I will always try to bring in some type of yoga philosophy in my classes. And I don't know how to say this, but if somebody doesn't like it, they don't have to come back. And it's not out of disrespect. It's just you're going to find the people that they like, the teachers that they like. And I might not resonate with everybody. Like Crystal's always told me, you can be the sweetest, like peach on the tree, but some people just don't like peaches. So I try to stay really true to myself. And of course, I'm not thumping somebody over the head with yoga philosophy and this is what they have to believe, but it's a lot of introducing them to different maybe thoughts or how that feels in their body and what spirituality is for me, or might bring in some of my own experiences and thoughts. But that doesn't mean that they have to necessarily think the same way. So it's a lot of like invitational language and that trauma-informed kind of language that I use in my classes. So people just feel safe to really think and experience yoga the way they want to.
I saved the fun business money questions for last. What's it
Bring
look?
Leanna on. Bring Leanna on. She's our business mentor.
Yes. I'm sure
Yeah.
you guys can both answer this. Do you think it's if you're a solo human without a co-earner in your household, can you work full-time in yoga and make a living these days?
Not in Fresno. Yeah.
Why is that?
You're
You're only
definitely
broke.
not in yoga teaching for the money. You're
Okay.
definitely not.
Okay. So, what is that? Is that people not paying enough for classes? Is that not having enough slots for classes to teach? What would you point to as the reason why that's not possible?
Oh gosh. One of them would be, say you teach like 10 classes a week would be a lot to teach. And if you make, say you make $50 a class, $40 a class, $400 a week, you know what I mean? It's hard to be sustainable long term for that. I also believe, and it's definitely not, again, no shade or anything to anyone, but it's definitely not because they don't charge enough for memberships or drop-ins to pay teachers. I don't know how to say it. I don't know. It's just, I feel like,
Say it, Tara. Whatever it is, say it. What's the
aren't
taboo
we?
shit that she can't say?
We can cut this out, right,
Of
Jordan?
course,
If
we can do
we
whatever you
have
guys want. I'm gonna send you a transcript after.
Yeah, I think it just, there's too much competition in Fresno, and a lot of businesses don't really preach. I mean, don't really practice what they preach. So there's a lot of competition, a lot of, if you work here, you can't work there. And that just doesn't help any yoga teachers because we're then stuck to one certain area in one certain place. We can only teach that so many classes in that certain place. Maybe we want to explore other areas and other places to teach, but we really can't.
So you don't think yoga studios should be charging more for classes?
If I didn't get, I probably wouldn't be able to afford to go to yoga if I didn't teach at a studio. It's expensive and it's not accessible. It's very like commercial.
Look, like, but we, Crystal, don't have a yoga. We don't have a yoga studio.
Thank
So,
goodness.
yeah, let me ask you the follow-up then. Let's imagine you're finishing up with your cohort, and then one of your students approaches you and says, "I just sold both my cars. I liquidated my savings. I sold some Bitcoin, and I'm just throwing it all in. I'm opening up a studio. My whole life savings is going into this. I found a spot somewhere on Shaw, and I want to open a studio. Is that a great idea?" What would you say to them?
First off, I'd have to take maybe 5 to 10 deep breaths. There's that space between.
Yeah, but you need to be honest with them because that's respect, being honest with people when they ask.
And that's that satya, which is one of the tenets of yoga, that truthfulness. I would just be honest. It's hard to be a business owner, especially of a brick and mortar, and still have that like business eye, but still love the yoga so much, which is one of the reasons, again, why I really look up to Leanna, is because she's held both of being a business owner and a yogi equally in her hands. I don't know. I mean, because we've had people who have passed through a cohort who has said they wanted to open a business, and I'm like, that's fantastic. I don't want to name specific people, but I don't know. Maybe it's just in Fresno, it might be a little more hesitant, or
Yeah,
yeah.
because it seems like Tara was saying the market's a little, maybe not oversaturated, but there's a lot of studios. And are you competing for
Well,
teachers more than students, or is it the other way around?
I don't think it's oversaturated. I wish that our community, yoga community, work together more, but egos get in the way. And then when egos get in the way, we can't really work together as a community. But just think about that, right? Like in bigger cities, one teacher can teach here and they can teach there and they can teach wherever. And maybe we have this community building where Crystal and I have always said there's enough people to do yoga and there's enough for the businesses to make money. And that if people work together a little bit more, we could make even more, they could make even more money. Our community could get even bigger.
Yeah, I'd affirm that. I think that's true in a lot of places in the Central Valley. There's this zero sum or scarcity mindset that, like, if you work with someone, you're losing something. And obviously, that's absurd. And what I've actually found recently, I've been doing this podcast series with all the member breweries that are part of the brewery district in the area. And it's amazing how much they collaborate with each other and really see the value in that. And but that is so rare around here. Everyone's zero sum games. And anyway, we can go down this road a while. I want us in with positivity. I want you each to share a story, either a student you worked with or some activity that you did through any of your trainings that really left an imprint on you as a teacher and really reminded you why you're doing this.
I would say for me, probably the first thing that comes to mind, I'm sure if I thought of it, there's a lot, but one of the first things that comes to mind is when I had a student come up to me and she was like on a long hike and she told me that she just kept like hearing my voice in her head encouraging her. And I don't know why, that was like many years ago, but just hearing that what I say in classes has an impact, like a positive impact on people's everyday life is why I do this. So just hearing that was just confirmation that, okay, I'm in the right spot. I'm on the right path.
Absolutely.
Seriously, change my life. Crystal changed my life. I would, I don't know, yeah, there's so many that come to mind, but I think Namaste for Compassion has been one of the things like that have really just always, I don't know, made me feel like this was my path. This is what I'm supposed to do. And now rooted heart. So I think just giving back the healing, that part, again, because it helped me so much, just the healing of yoga, that's what I continue to want to do for others.
That's wonderful. We always close these podcasts with book recommendations. I know Crystal already gave one, so we'll start with you, Tara. And then, Crystal, maybe I can get one more out of you. What are you reading these days? What would you like to recommend to listeners?
I'm going to be honest, I don't really read that as much as I want to. As soon as I start reading, I usually fall asleep. So, like one time I joined a book club just so I'd make myself read, and even then I just like skimmed the books and
Just
get
chat
the
GPT the
highlights.
summaries.
Yeah, I did. And then I don't know. I usually listen to podcasts and all kinds of stuff.
Okay, recommend some podcasts. Let's do that because you've already been on the show,
So
so you already recommended books. Give me podcasts.
yeah, it just, gosh, there's so many different podcasts. The Huberman podcast is what I listen to because it's so scientific and like research based. I
You
just like, I'm like,
have the endurance to get through those episodes. They're so long, dude.
no, I have to rewind them and listen to it again a
Oh my
couple
gosh,
of times. But again, I
yeah.
take the
There's so
highlights.
much information there. They're information rich. I just, it's so hard for me, my brain, to process through all that.
Yeah, it is. But then there's some like little highlights that I'm just like, oh. But the book that I really did get through and I really loved a lot was Breath by, I think,
James
James.
Nestor.
Yeah, it's like bright yellow cover. And that was pretty amazing because I was like, oh my God, breath is life. And it is.
Yeah. No, after I read that book, I just walked around going, I was just walking around. I'm gonna feel my breath today. Crystal, what do you have to recommend?
Don't even remember what the other one I recommended was.
You
But
recommended Jesus and yoga or something.
oh, the Yoga of Jesus, yeah.
Yeah.
So my favorite, like probably one of my favorite yoga books is actually called The Mindful Athlete by George Mumford. I just love it. I feel like it's super digestible. It breaks it down in a really easy, understandable way. I also love Buddha's Brain by Rick Hansen. It gets a little bit more into the neuroscience behind the why of mindfulness and breath and stuff. And then my last favorite would be The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer, which talks a lot about like the inner roommate and the little voice inside your head. So those are probably
I
my three.
love The Untethered Soul. Oh my
So
God. It's
good.
been so long since I've read it. I need to go back to that book.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, I always think of
Fun.
the quote from that book where he's, imagine your inner roommate was sitting on a couch next to you, and saying the things that your voice in your head is saying, you'd probably punch him in the face. And I'm like, yeah, that's true. So I always think about that.
Yeah. Well, so you said that a cohort just recently ended. When's the next
It
one?
will be June.
June. Okay. So June soon. When's the next one? How do people sign up? What's the process?
Bye, Christy.
Our next cohort starts January 2026. It'll be our fourth cohort. Applications are up on our website, rootedheart.yoga. And yeah, they're open, so you can go on. It's a really brief application, just a couple of really open-ended questions. You can answer them in as much depth as you want to. And then we have a little reviewing process that we go through. Yeah, and then we'll let people know. So applications are open. And it seems, I know, I feel like everybody says this, but it truly does fill up really quick, which we're so blessed to be able to say that. So if you're interested, go check it out.
Where
Reach
do
out.
if people have questions, how do they reach out?
Through the website, and we'll get back to them. Like, we can call them, we can email them, whatever they prefer.
Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, you can support this podcast by leaving us a rating and review or by making a financial contribution at our Patreon page, which is www.patreon.com/Fresno's Best. We'll see you next time.